behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We're here with Noel, the spark plug Brown, our super producer, as always.
Spark plug, I like it. Or we could go with one that's like a precursor to his name. I don't know how, a prefix, I guess.
Oh, okay, like
do-it-yourself Noel.
Oh, yeah. With, ladies and gentlemen, our super producer, do-it-yourself Noel Brown, is here. You are here, and that makes this Car Stuff. What are we doing in today's episode?
Well, today I came across an article, and this was I guess it's really good timing. I'll explain that in just a moment. But
yeah.
I came across an article in Jalopnik. I was reading through some of the blogs and some of the sites that I gather a bunch of information for our Facebook post, you know, our Facebook page and all that. And I came across one that it piqued my interest, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But it's titled "Here are some easy jobs to get you started with working on cars." And I thought, well, okay, let's see what the recommendation is here. And it was a solid article, you know, a good bit of advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, and our experienced renters in the crowd here, don't tune out because I got some questions for you along the way too. But I was wondering if people in general now feel as confident about attempting auto repair at home as they did in the past. I mean, I wonder if, you know, the older people like myself that have a newer car are as comfortable doing repairs themselves. I wondered if younger kids that have a relatively new car are comfortable even beginning anything like this, you know, like the simple things that we normally would do in the past, if that's even possible anymore. And then again, what about others, like young kids that maybe have an older car that you can do a lot of stuff on? Are they confident in doing that even? So there's a bunch of different levels to look at here, and I find all of it interesting. So I think I'd like to kind of step through this article later.
Okay.
But I guess I also want to ask you too along the way, and we'll think about this as we talk. Mm-hmm. But what are you comfortable doing on your own? You know, DIY fix at home.
Yeah.
Or wherever, on the road even.
Have you ever been in over your head?
You know, that's a really good one, yeah. And we'll get to that as well, I'm sure, because I've had some that have just kind of, like, simple things that have just kind of spiraled out of control, and it happens. But I guess more than anything, I can maybe give, like, a little bit of advice, maybe.
Sure.
You know, like, some things that, some general know-how type stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's not, like, a specific a tutorial how to change your oil or how to change spark plugs or anything like that. This is more just a general... you know, what should you attempt at home? What maybe you should avoid at home? Why you would avoid it? Why you should attempt it? I guess it's just kind of a catch-all episode that describes a lot of things that, you know, a lot of questions that people may have. Sound all right to you?
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
All right. So should I start out by asking Ben, maybe what is, like maybe the most complex thing that you've ever attempted at home? And then also, you know, something that where maybe you thought it was easy and then you got in over your head.
Let's see, the most complex thing. I haven't done, too much complex stuff. Usually it's just been what I would consider the basic at home maintenance, you know, oil changes, spark plugs, things like that. But one thing that stands out in my mind as something that went, weirdly wrong was, when the brother of a girl I was dating and I worked on her car, and we had to drop the gas tank and replace it.
You've mentioned this one in the past. I think it was years ago when you said it, but it must have been quite a deal, because every time you talk about it, it seems like it pains you a bit. It's like
we were out there for a while.
It must have been a hard, like a long, hard day to get this done, right?
I think we just didn't. You know what it was? Whenever you're going to do any kind of car repair, you should always make sure you are prepared for the repair.
Yeah.
And we just sort of hopped in.
Well, this comes up in the advice that we'll give later. I'm sure you've got a lot of stuff to share as well, but these are just some simple things that we'll talk about. I think, you know, it's funny. I think back to, God, this goes all the way back to when I was in like seventh grade, Ben. My first attempt at doing anything really mechanical. I was a little bit, you're daunted by this thing. You know, it's something that, you know, you're not accustomed to looking at something, you know, a system or an engine or whatever and tearing it apart. Well, in seventh grade, I had this is an invaluable lesson, by the way. If you're a kid, this is the way to do it. In seventh grade, my shop teacher, because shop was mandatory and it was wood shop and a little bit of everything. He gave, at the beginning of this particular unit, he brought out of the closet, I don't know, maybe 10 or so Briggs & Stratton lawnmower engines.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
The idea here was, I'm sure a lot of people have done this. I don't know if they're still doing it or not, but he brought out these lawnmower engines and placed them on everybody's, you know, shop bench. And there's groups of three or four people. And the task was that we were going to completely disassemble the engine and understand everything that happened, you know, how the workings of it, the inner workings of it, and how everything fit together.
And then
had to reassemble it.
Ah.
And it had to start in order to get credit for that unit. And did you go through something like this too?
I did not go through that in a classroom environment, but I've had some situations with – I always enjoy taking apart mechanical things, mm-hmm. right? Even, for instance, you know, a cell phone. One time I got a hold of a microwave. That was cool. But small engines, when I was a kid, I was really fascinated with a lot of them. And then
I know recently out of necessity you've had to tear down lawnmower engines, right?
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that if or when you meet Noel and Scott in person, you give them condolences for having to tolerate my unending complaint about that lawnmower.
I think at a certain point you just decided it was done, right?
Yeah.
Or did you ever get it going?
I did get it going.
Oh, okay.
I did get it going, and I eventually just gave it away.
Yeah.
Somebody wanted to buy it, but I said, you know, I've done enough with this that I don't think it would be fair for me to bilk you.
Well, anyways, that's like the simplest form of this, really. And a lot of people learn on a lawnmower engine, or they learn stuff like that when they're young. And, I mean, it pays off. I mean, all the way until, you know, you're going to be doing that as long as you own lawnmowers or, you know, or, any type of lawn equipment like that, you know, weed whips or whatever that are gas powered. But the thing is, like, it gives you that confidence.
Uh-huh.
And the confidence is really, really critical here. So if you're a listener who has never done anything like this, never attempted a spark plug repair, never attempted a lawn, you know, an oil change or anything like that, it's a great time to do something like this. It really is, because you've got so much information available at your fingertips all the time with a phone or with a laptop or whatever you have. All that stuff is out there. People have done tutorials on this over and over again. You can watch your specific vehicle, your specific repair, probably in many places, exactly what you'll need. They'll give you a list of tools that you need. They will show you step by step what to do, some tips, some tricks, you know, how to avoid certain problems, some issues. Maybe even some shortcuts along the way that will save you some time. Mm-hmm. It's a really good time to do this. And the confidence thing, once you've done it, do you find it super satisfying after you've completed a successful repair?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
I mean, that sense is like, I don't know. It's like, what is it? Dopamine that's released in your body. Right. It really is. It gives you like almost a high. It feels really good to successfully complete a repair like this. And these that we'll talk about, you know, this is just really, again, a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to discuss even, but, I'll also caution you though that we're going to talk about some things maybe that, you know, or some asterisks, I guess, on this that will let you know. Maybe not everything is cut out for at home work, you know, like some things that require special tools or some procedures that are really dangerous or some things that are more precise than what you're capable of doing on your workbench at home. And there's a lot of that now, more so than there was on cars decades ago.
So before we dive in too deep, there are a couple things we should do first. Scott, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever had any surprise repairs, or have you had any difficult situations?
Have you ever listened to any previous Car Stuff episode? Yeah, I've had so many things pop up and just like, you know, like things that just blow my mind. Like thinking about them now, what happened and how I was able to limp home.
Yeah,
with certain things happening on the road or, you know, great distances from home.
Like a timing belt goes out.
Yeah, things like that. And like, you know, sometimes tow is required, but uh-huh. more often than not, in some of my older cars, I was able to get home, you know, on my own with whatever I had brought with me. And that's part of carrying a good kit, you know, specific for my vehicle and also general enough that if anything happened, I could generally take care of it long enough to get home using, you know, pieces of rope and even like a small block of wood to hold an alternator in place, you know, like when that bolt drops out or, you know, just crazy stuff like that. But it's enough just to get home and then you can do the actual repair. Or if you're not comfortable with it, you can, you know, send it off to a pro. But Older cars were generally good for that. And this isn't going to be a new car bashing episode by any means, because you can still do a lot on a new car.
Right. Okay. But here's, this is the second thing.
Yeah.
It is a misconception if it's too broad of an accusation, but in a general trend, we see some conflation where people say that, people say, for instance, younger generations don't care about cars, don't want to own them or don't want to fix them. That also is a misconception, because what we're seeing is that more and more auto technology is designed to, is designed such that the owner cannot repair it.
Correct. Yes.
Right. Like, you're in the warranties of some hybrids and electric cars, you're not allowed to open certain parts of the vehicle.
You know, here's something I just found out.
What's that?
My car, it's a 2012 Volkswagen, and I looked in the owner's manual for the fuse diagram. A problem I was having recently, I'll describe in a moment. But I was looking for the fuse diagram for which fuses control what. Simple thing, right? And I thought, okay, well, I can't find it. It's not listed in the owner's manual.
Weird.
So I opened up the fuse box thinking that maybe it's printed on the cover.
Yeah, on the inside plate.
Yeah, or even next to the fuse. You know, sometimes they label them that way. It's not there. I think this requires you get a shop manual of some kind or something like that. I mean, I just can't believe that, you know, you could be stuck somewhere, anywhere, and not know, you know, where your headlamp fuse is, or not know. It's just not marked anywhere. And if it is, it's a secret. I still haven't found it. You know, it's ridiculous that stuff like that's not included in owner's manuals now, but there's other things like that that I'm coming across, weekly, I would say.
Did you hear the thing about Clark Howard and the Prius?
No. What's that?
So he was a big Prius fan, I believe, at one point, but his opinion changed because in the owner's manual, apparently, and listeners, write in if you own a Prius and this is true. Apparently in the owner's manual, which I have not read yet, there's no spare tire. And when you get to the part about how to replace or change a tire, there's a can of Fix-A-Flat instead.
Oh, boy.
And then they tell you to call a tow company.
Oh,
something
no.
Something like that.
Yeah. Really? If you can't make it home with a Fix-A-Flat, which, by the way, that's like a last resort type thing, really.
Fix-A-Flat. I mean,
that's an emergency thing.
Is an emergency
thing. Yeah, yeah. And I know that was kind of the trend, was to include a, you know, a 12-volt pump, you know, an air pump. And a can of Fix-A-Flat. Because some of the cars, let's think like the Crossfire, I think, Chrysler Crossfire, that was one, didn't have room for a spare. And it had run-flat tires, which was also helpful. But, you know, that only gets you so far. There's just some strange things that happen occasionally as trends, I guess. The thing with the fuses, I couldn't believe it until it happened. And then I go online to look for the answer, and, you know, it's still difficult to locate the answer. Which is a little bit frustrating, but,
And just for the record, I'm not just picking on Prius. Spare tires are less and less common.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you do have one, it's more than likely a space saver spare, a very small one, a tiny donut.
Little donut.
Yeah. Yeah, that's typically the case.
So you have to do the drive of shame.
Yeah, like super slow. And,
always felt like just such a punk when I was, you know, like so foolish.
But, you know, it happens.
Driving in those.
Happens to everybody, right? I mean, at some point, you're going to probably get a flat
that's
tire.
True. So that's true.
And it's good that you knew how to put that on.
It's a motivating factor, too, to get your tires in better shape.
Well, and the thing is, Ben, okay, so this kind of leads into what we're saying.
It's what's that?
Changing a tire, you know, putting a spare on.
Everyone.
That's something that everyone should learn. I've had some back and forth correspondence with Rudy Smith recently, one of our longtime listener, Rudy Smith.
Yeah.
And, he was talking about how his daughter, who, you know, I think she's in college.
Okay.
And, he had, you know, gone through the whole drive, you know, teaching her to drive and, you know, how to, you know, the ins and outs of a car. You know, he's very thorough. Rudy.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was almost practically like a class that he gave his kids, which I think is great.
Yeah.
And, in routine maintenance and, you know, just what to watch for, you know, like, make sure you always have a, tire gauge. If this happens, you do this. And, you know, he had it all laid out, and they even went through practice drills where they changed tires on the car, you know, like, the one day I think how did he put it? He said, one day I'll pull the ultimate trick where I'll deflate one of the tires, one of the good tires.
Oh, no.
And we'll discover, you know, the flat tire. And then it'll be her job to change that, you know, under my supervision. So they did all that, right? And it's a great lesson to learn.
Uh-huh.
Everybody really on the road should do this, should know how to change a tire. And So not long ago, she got her first for real flat tire and sort of panicked about it a little bit, which resulted in a call to dad, you know, to find out, you know, what should I do?
What do I do?
Yeah. And he said, no, we've done this before. You know how to do it. He kind of talked her through it, and everything turned out just fine. She remembered all the lessons that he had taught her. But something as simple as that, now that's probably a huge confidence booster for her to do it herself in a real situation. And I think that a lot of people need that with other things too. I mean, that's as simple as that, just a spare tire. That might give you the confidence to say, well, I mean, I've looked up the directions on how to perform an oil change on my car. It's pretty easy. I'll just give it a shot this weekend. What's the worst that can happen, really? I mean, something like that is pretty simple. That's a good one to start with. Changing filters, you know, maybe change an air filter. Change cabin air filter.
You're getting me started on air filters, man. Oh. One of the number one scams. If you have time and space, you should be changing your oil at home.
Yeah.
If only to avoid the hassle of people continually trying to upsell you on stuff and at times deceitfully telling you that your air filter needs to be changed.
Well, that's true. That happens often. It seems like every time you go in, they tell you the filters have to be changed.
And many times that's true.
Well, they're marked up, you know, so that you can, if you know how to do something like that, you can say, no, I have that at home. That's my line is that, I have it at home. It's on my workbench. I'm going to do it tonight when I get home.
Right. Yeah.
And same with cabin air filters. You know, you'll end up paying a lot more for that part at the oil change place, the quick oil change place than you will if you buy it off the shelf. And of course, some of that is maintenance, you know, not maintenance, but markup rather, because they have to make money on that and the labor to put it in. So I get that.
And some of the less scrupulous places have been caught lying to people.
Showing them a dirty air filter that's not even from their car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. I know it does happen, but more often than not, they're giving you decent advice. But you don't need to change your air filter every 3,000 miles if that's when you're changing your oil too. It's not necessary every time.
Well, another thing that's cool about these sorts of repairs is that for any listener out there who has a kid that's approaching driving age, which I guess counts you as well, right, Scott?
Yeah, it's coming up.
One of the best things that I've seen people do is to train your kid, get your kid more familiar with the car by doing repair stuff if you haven't started already. Mm-hmm. Like before I knew how to drive, I knew how to change drum brakes and disc brakes. And I hated drum brakes, but I could still do it. I just tried to avoid it at all costs.
That is an excellent skill to learn. That's, I guess on this beginning list, that's more, a little bit more complex.
A little more advanced.
Yeah, a little bit. Not much, because it's really a lot more simple than people think.
Yeah, I was just, I was just like a rug rat hanging out with my dad in the garage.
That's a great way to learn. And plus you see him do it and then you know, all right, well, if he can do that, I can do that. It's not like, you know, it required a bunch of extra special tools or anything like that. And we did it in the garage. I remember that part. So it's possible.
And it's a bonding thing, right?
Yeah.
But you're right, Scott. Let's talk about some of the basic, most simplistic stuff. We talked about changing a spare, which I agree with you is something that everyone on the road needs to know how to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're going to find yourself in a position where you're going to have to do this either on the side of the road or in a parking lot or, you know, wherever you are. You need to know the basics of how to do this, where the tools are in the car.
Yeah.
How to follow the step, because the steps should be laid out for you in your owner's manual.
And you can be someone's hero too.
Yeah, you can. That's right. You could assist somebody else in this process and they will be super happy about it, because there's there are plenty of people out there that don't know how to do this. And if you're one that does know how to, again, you can step in and be a hero for the day.
You want to know something really crazy? I don't think I've ever said this on air.
What's that?
You might not even know. When our office was in its previous location, I think I was on the third level parking deck. We had a parking deck that was under our building, and the third level deck was still open to the air, right? And I was there with a coworker when we see a Honda Odyssey turn and drive toward the exit, and the back right tire, I think it was the back right, it's back right or back left, is flat. Oh man, it's terrible. And it's gonna, you know, it's flat to the point where I see it and I think, how does she not know?
Well, it's only flat on the bottom part.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was my bad. So we like flagged this lady down, and she's thinking there's a, you know, said, well, it seemed like it was driving a little weird. And like, didn't you stop and think about that?
Wow.
And so, and an older lady as well.
Sure.
So I changed the tire on her Honda Odyssey.
That's like, well, I don't even know how to put that into.
It was emotionally difficult.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's like your arch nemesis vehicle.
I mean, I'm just now learning to talk about it. But, and this is a true story.
Ben's kryptonite.
You could check with my, you could check with our coworker, Lauren Vogelbaum. She was there.
Wow.
And I said, don't tell anybody.
Yeah, you haven't told me that.
No, I swear, man, scout's honor. That's true.
You know what? You did the right thing.
I'm not proud of it.
Well, no, you did the right thing. And that's the thing is if everybody, you know, knew how to do that, then you wouldn't have been in that position, I guess. But, it's nice that you could step in and help somebody out. I'm sure they appreciate it.
And you've done the same thing. And listeners, you probably have done the same thing as well.
Yeah, sure. It happens daily. I mean, I see three or four people on the way home that have a flat tire on the side of the road, but they look like they're handling it. So I don't ever stop to do it.
You know, another one that's really simple.
What's that?
Headlamps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Changing headlamps. Now, this one has a couple of varying different levels, too.
There's some caveats.
Sometimes you'll get a vehicle where you'll have to move the battery. You'll have to, you know, slide something out of the way in order to get at the back of the headlamp. Mm. The older cars, you know, you come in from the front, really. It was more like a lamp, I guess. You know, you plug it into a socket. These, you still plug into a socket, but they're encased in plastic now, and that's why you see everybody with those yellow headlamps, or the lenses anyways. But it's a little bit more difficult on the newer cars, but also it's a super simple thing to do. And again, mm-hmm. big confidence booster, because once you've repaired something like that, mm-hmm. then all the bulbs in the vehicle are possible, really. nothing is impossible to fix on the car, really. I mean, honestly, if you just have the confidence to do it and if you take a few minutes to think about the repair, think about it logically before you attack it, because you want to start breaking trim pieces and, you know, stripping screws and things like that if you don't have the right tools and, you know, et cetera. But that's part of my advice that's coming up later.
Yeah, that's exactly. Okay, I'll save mine.
All right,
for the same thing.
So what about, we mentioned air filter. That's the engine air filter.
Right.
Very, very easy. Sometimes it's a few screws on top of the box.
Plastic box.
Yeah, sometimes it's that easy. Other times it's even just clips, you know, that you just undo with your fingers. It's really, really simple. How about, we talked about the replacing bulbs and oil and mm-hmm. we mentioned brakes, but I want to come back to that in just a moment.
Okay.
But, spark plugs. Now this one,
spark plugs.
Okay. This one hits a personal note here. last weekend, you know, yeah, this is tough. This has been a tough week. So a couple of months ago, I think we talked about, dealer service versus doing it yourself.
Right.
Right. Or taking it to another mechanic or, you know, whatever the case may be. Should I take it into the dealership? Should I do it on my own? I decided that I was going to start doing the stuff on my own to save, you know, the $600 or $700 that the 10,000 mile checkups are going to cost.
Which is not a small slice of scratch.
No, it becomes expensive because, you know, then they've got your vehicle there and they start recommending things. And if you don't do it, then you either have to do it yourself because it's necessary or, well, there's a couple of options for you, I guess. But my choice was to, look at the list, you know, the recommended service, and have it done, you know, some of it done at a shop because the oil changes and things like that. I just don't have the time to do it on the weekend. It's easier. Mm-hmm. So I have that done, and I decided, well, I can change the filters. I can, look at the spark plugs and see if they're okay and, you know, whatever they recommend. Some of the stuff is just inspect, not replace. So
I see.
I'm confident doing all that stuff, all the fluids and all that, maintaining it. That's fine. There's some things that I am going to have to go to the dealer for, like, you know, trans fluid change and things like that. Timing belt, you know, those issues. Mm-hmm. But, it was time for me to do the spark plugs and it's 60,000 miles. So I simply went in to change the spark plugs. And I bought a set of spark, and there was nothing wrong with them, by the way. And I had done the air filters and, mm-hmm. you know, the cabin filters and all that. Mm-hmm. Simple enough to replace spark plugs, but they've got these coils, you know, that they're not, it's not like the old type with the wires that come from the distributor and, you know, it's not that way anymore. It's now these coil packs that feed down deep into the head mm-hmm. and, you pull them out and then you have to have an extension to get the plugs out. So take them out. Everything works fine. Replace the plugs, put in what's, you know, recommended by the auto parts store.
Great.
Asked about their pre-gapped and all that. Oh yeah, they're pre-gapped. Everything's fine. You know, it's a direct fit for your car and they're pre-gapped.
Okay.
Well, this is car, you know, auto maintenance 101, I guess, when I did not check the gap on those plugs before I put them in. In my haste, I just put them in, thinking that they were going to be gapped correctly from the factory.
That's not like you.
Oh, I know it. I just didn't do it. I skipped that one simple step and put them in, and later found out that they were gapped way too big and varying gaps. They weren't even consistent in the gap. And I blew out a coil on the thing on the way. But this is like a day and a half later when this problem happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever's happening, you know, the engine's bucking and it's dying on me and it won't get up to speed. And I'm still downtown. So I limp home. I mean, literally, I think it was in limp-in mode. It was acting very, very strange. I get home and I start digging around online to find out what could cause that. And of course, I remember that I just put spark plugs in, and this seems like an electrical issue, a misfire thing.
Yeah.
So start there, right? And just by chance, you know, there are many, many people that say all those coils go out all the time, and here's exactly what it does. And it was exhibiting all of those symptoms, every one of them. So I knew that was probably the culprit.
Yeah.
I pulled out the plugs again. You know, all this stuff is just frustrating, you know, to no end, because I'm taking off the connectors that go to the coils.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, three out of the four clips I break off with my fingertip, because where they are, where they're positioned, they're super brittle now because of the heat that's generated right there.
Yeah.
It's just frustrating. Like every little step is like, it should be a simple thing, replacing spark plugs, but every little thing was fighting me every step of the way. And finally I got it all back together, got the new coils. I had to order those and they missed the truck. And you know, that ended up happening late at night one night. And it was just, the whole thing was trouble, but it was easy to find somebody else who had dealt with the exact same situation and gave me a good starting spot, you know, somewhere that I could go without having a diagnostic tool, because I don't have that yet, but I think I'm going to get one specific for that vehicle.
And, right, because it's still going to have the check engine on it.
Yeah, so see, I mean, I've been working on cars for decades now, really.
Yeah.
And something like this can be so troubling to me. Even as simple as a spark plug change, something can go wrong that will cause it to be a bigger repair that maybe you didn't intend, you know, to tackle. And then you have to think your way around it, or take it somewhere and have them do it for the added expense of undoing what you've done, and then completing the fix. So I'm guessing that you've probably had things like that too, where you started something, realize it's just something that you can't carry on with. You know, like I did this, and now this is happening, something different. I'm going to take it into the dealer and have them look at it.
Oh, wait. Okay. Up till you said dealer, I was like, well, yes, I too have started a Pink Floyd cover band. That was just too much. We got off more than we could chew. No, you're right. I've been in situations where, in my case, when I was still living back home with my folks, it was way easier because they had all the tools. They had most of the tools I would need. So I was able to address a varied number of repairs. But when I was living in apartments, or when I was living in smaller rented houses, sometimes what I would do at that house versus what I would go to a dealership for was decided by the access to tools.
Oh, sure. And you know? In every position, did you have a garage available to you as well? I mean, or sometimes were you in an open parking lot?
Exactly.
And
that's,
again,
you can do it there, but
it's frowned upon by management usually.
Really?
Usually.
I can see that.
Usually. But what do you think? I mean, also, you're susceptible to rain and things like that, you know, more so than if you're in a garage, of course.
And then if it's a shared parking lot, you have to be respectful of other people's space.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So especially if it's a tight lot and you need to jack up a car and some space to move around it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But with that being said, I've been very fortunate to rarely get in over my head, and that all goes down to what I'm going to say is my number one tip for familiarizing yourself or other people with any kind of auto repair, especially if you're helping someone who doesn't know a lot about cars, dip their toes in for the first time. Then the key, whether you are inexperienced or super experienced, the key is always this: prepare. Be prepared. I know it sounds Boy Scoutish, but have the entire operation in your head before you actually put your hands on anything.
Yeah, that's where an online tool of any kind,
yes,
I mean, is so, so helpful in this situation. And as well as print material. And I take notes before I do any kind of repair where, you know, I have, well, you know, bad example here, but the second time around I had, you know, the spark plug gap, the torque specs for the plugs,
mm-hmm,
made sure I had my torque wrench, make sure I had all the right fittings, make sure, you know, if I needed a specific bit for the job, you know, like because that's the thing with these online tutorials or even in the of course in the manuals, you know, the shop manuals, mm-hmm, they're going to tell you specifically what tools you need, and you might as well just go ahead and get that stuff out and ready to go. And if you're missing something,
yeah,
don't start the project yet. Go to the store and get that that specific, you know, bit driver, whatever you need,
right,
to make this work. If you need a certain length of extension for your socket set, you make sure you have that, because that stuff is going to be, you got your car halfway apart. That's, uh-huh, not the time to discover you're missing a tool.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's I guess the best way. And also, no one starts out as an expert. That's another thing, is that I think everybody who starts this, that feels like, well, man, I don't know if you've never done a repair like this before, you might think like, I don't know if I have the confidence to do this. I don't know what I'm going to encounter.
Right.
This is something that usually other guys do. I'm not really that kind of guy to fix things on my own. But
they might feel like a young Scott Benjamin in shop class saying, well, wait, it has to start when we put it back together?
Yeah, what am I going to do with this engine that you just put in front of me? That looks complex,
uh-huh,
you know, but it's really, really simple. But you don't know that until you dig into it. And then you realize, like, it's a lot easier than you think. And as long as you follow the procedures. And that's the other thing, is you got to be able to follow instructions. And I guess it's the same as like cooking or anything. You know, it's, you have to follow the recipe in order to make it turn out correct.
Right.
And the same thing with this is these procedures that are put in place. It's because people have done it hundreds of times, thousands of times. They know exactly what you're going to do, or how, mm-hmm, you should do it, rather. Mm-hmm. You just have to follow that step by step, and likely everything will come out okay. So that's the thing, is just be prepared. Follow the instructions and everything should work out fine. And just have the confidence to begin that process. That's the thing, is just you got to get in and get hands on. And if it helps you, have somebody that's more experienced,
oh, yeah,
stand by and watch you or guide you a little bit.
And
they're happy to do that.
Or have someone equally inexperienced bring the beer.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing, is like, I said this before, but you can go online and watch YouTube videos of your specific repair.
Oh, yeah.
Just about anything, really. I mean, it's amazing what's there. There's so much available right now.
And you'll need it too, because some cars are just going to have innately more sophisticated repairs, mm-hmm, just due to the design. I think I have mentioned this before, but one of the great and strange engineering idiosyncrasies about the Monte Carlo that I had was that to change the battery, which is another thing everyone should be able to do, which we'll get to, but to change the battery, you had to remove this strut that was under the hood,
yeah,
between the battery and, between the battery and the hood. And it took like 4 bolts on it.
Yeah.
So it didn't take that long. It was just a pain. It was very much like, why is this thing here? And then the battery itself was sideways. It was on its side,
hmm,
my friend.
Hmm.
Because the way they had designed this, I guess they hadn't designed it with...
Oh, you're saying the terminals were on the side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the liquids would stay in because the caps are on the top.
Right.
The main,
yes,
is caps, I
guess. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
But the, yeah, the terminals were on the side. And it hit me the first time I had to change it, and every time I would help somebody with a jump or something, started to irritate me. You know how little things irritate you sometimes?
Yeah.
And especially familiarity breeds a sort of contempt. I love that car, but man, every time I opened the hood and I saw the awkward placement of the battery, some part of me was like, I'm going to find the name of the people who designed it, which is crazy and petty and dumb. But my point being, like, there are some things that you will find depending upon the make model of your car that will be, I guess if we wanted to rate them in like 3 arbitrary levels I made up right now.
Okay.
There would be, a few things are going to be very, very simple systems. Should always be very simple to change a tire, to replace a headlamp, things like that. there are going to be things that are intermediate prior preparation, right? Prevents piss poor performance or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then number three, which is more disturbing and which we've mentioned that we see the rise of more and more often now, will be the just mysterious black boxes that you, even though you own your car, are not allowed to touch.
Yeah. These are the control modules, the electronic modules that in turn control everything in the vehicle and talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And the problem is you can get a diagnostic code reader. And right. You can buy a generic scan tool and plug it in, it'll work. And you can buy ones that's specific for your vehicle, you know, your type of vehicle, and that'll even be better, which will give you codes that you can then use to make the proper repairs. But there's kind of a false confidence that comes about with these, I think, sometimes. That, you know, you can get the codes, but then what caused the codes to happen? You know, there's more troubleshooting, more diagnostics that have to happen, more critical thinking, I think, that has to happen. You can't just blindly go with what even that code reader says. So, you know, that's an answer, but it's not the end-all answer to everything. I mean, it would help a lot, you know, if you know what to do with that. But you still need to think through this whole thing. And that's something that I've learned along the way. I guess a little bit more advice, I suppose, is that take a little bit of time to really think about it. Don't just dive in and start throwing parts at you know, the problem when you think you know what it is, because that's going to get really expensive. It could cause other problems in some situations. You replace sensors that then – there can be problems with doing that, and usually there are problems with doing that. You want to find the underlying root cause of whatever you're repairing and go for that. And if you're not capable of – thinking through the way the whole system works, and it does take some learning, I guess, you know, some book learning or online learning, I guess. You have to really dig into this and understand the whole system in order to know that replacing this part isn't going to fix the problem. It's going to come back again, or it's not going to do anything. It's going to have the exact same drivability issues that you had before.
Right.
But now you've spent $150 on that part that you thought it was, and that's not it. It was still good. The one that you threw out was good. So that happens a lot. And all this stuff, I mean, you can't emphasize that enough, is that, you know, the critical thinking, the, you know, attacking the root cause is what you really need to do. And that's something that comes with, I guess, more advanced knowledge, but I guess just age, you know, like where you, you've done this for a while now, and you know that, you know, that fuse isn't, you don't, the answer when you got a blown fuse isn't to just keep replacing the fuse. You got to find what's causing that fuse to blow. And that type of thinking, that's what that,
and there
to
are
a
people,
bigger extent,
yeah,
though.
There are people who just drive around with extra fuses.
Well, sure, yeah.
And it's just not, ready to pop it in.
It's not a bad idea to do that, I guess, because, you know, there's going to be a situation where, let's say you're jump-starting someone's vehicle and you cross the turn, you make a mistake. You cross the terminals, something else blows out, and the fuse goes. I mean, then you know what happened. And the fuse, you knew why the fuse blew.
Ah, but my friend, I'm referring specifically to the people who say, I know there is a problem that needs to be fixed, but I'll just keep driving this thing. That's, you know, like, maybe I know my car eats a lot of oil, so instead of finding the leak, why don't I just always have
just
oil?
Carry oil.
Just top it off.
Well, that happens. I mean, and sometimes that's a stopgap thing that you have to do. You have to, you know, wait until you've got the money to fix the part or whatever. And that's, and here we are. More advice, I guess. You don't need, you know, bucket loads of money to do some of this stuff. In fact, doing it yourself will save you a lot of money and labor if it's something that you can confidently do on your own. It's something that you don't make a bigger mess out of. You know, then it ends up costing you a lot more. Let's say that you get overly confident and you think, like, well, I'm gonna tackle that timing chain myself. I'm gonna do that job at home in the garage on the weekend. And then, you know, what would have been an expensive repair at the dealership or, you know, the local mechanic. Let's say it would have been like $1,200 to replace it, because those things are deep in the engine.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to take the front end of the car off to get to it or whatever. An old Audi that I had was like that. But let's say that you attempt that on your own and you get it to the point where, you know, you've either screwed something up and caused, you know, a problem inside the engine, or, you know, just along the way you've given up. You know, you needed too many special tools and it's just too hard and you're not going to have this thing done by the time you need to go to work on Monday. Then it becomes, you know, instead of a $1,200 job, now it's like a $4,000 job because of, you know, them having to mop up what you've made a mistake of, you know, your incorrect repair. So use some good common sense, I guess. I think that's another thing is just, you know, really think it through. And is it something that you should attempt on your own? Not everything is possible at home anymore. Like you said, transmissions that are finicky about the specific types of fluids they require and the seals and how they're treated. And they have to be almost assembled in like a practically like a clean room. Where there's no dust, no anything, because all that stuff can foul everything up. And really, you know, inside of a transmission is it's very, very complex. You don't want to tackle that on your own workbench in most cases. Some people can. It's not recommended for most people. But there's there's a few things like that. So look into it and get on the forums. Talk to other people that have your specific vehicle. And they will kind of have a – they'll say, well, how experienced are you at turning a wrench? And, you know, are you are you good at this? Or are you generally not good at it?
Are you newer?
They're going to kind of gauge your ability and let you know whether you should or should not attempt this. You know, like I think it was on, you know, on a forum recently for this whole spark plug coil thing that I saw someone who said, you know, if you can't do this, then you probably shouldn't be pumping your own gas. It's that easy. You know, this part is so easy. You don't need to worry.
Now, you know, there are still some people who don't pump their own gas.
I do that. I do know that. But, you know, get ready for a little bit of that on there, too. You know, some sarcasm. But you have to watch out for that anywhere, really, now online, it seems. But there'll be some people that are generally or genuinely there to help you as well.
I think it's fun. It's productive. It keeps you out of the bars. It keeps you out of the bars, off the side of the interstate. But it also, I think also it's an opportunity that is not going to be as frequent in the near future. Because again, I know I might be beating a dead Buick here, but the overall trend is pointing toward cars that cannot be repaired at home.
I think you're right.
And I think that's a terrible thing.
I agree. And you know what? I've this week with this was going on.
Yeah.
And I was reading about some of the possibilities of what it could have been. Now, the coil packs fixed it and it's drivable. I'm here at work now, so it definitely worked. But
yeah,
I was looking at some of the possibilities of what it also could have been. And it wasn't likely, but it possibly could have been. Some of those things were pretty scary. You know, that the potential problems that create similar symptoms in the car. And you start reading and you're reading some of those and you think like, man, that's something I can't tackle that at home unless I have this specific tool. And if I buy that tool, then how often am I going to use that tool? And how long before I make up that cost, you know, in being able to repair something myself? How long will that take? Because it's expensive. All these scenarios go through your head. And you're right, Ben, that I feel like a lot of people now just say, I can't even imagine doing much more than just checking the oil level in the car and replacing a few filters. And that's about it. I mean, that most people are not comfortable plugging in a scan tool, diagnosing the car with that, and then thinking about what the issue is. And then, you know, soldering in harnesses and, you know, a lot of people aren't comfortable with that anymore. And so much of it now is electronic work.
Right.
That it makes it really, really difficult. And that's good and bad. I mean, you know, cars run fantastic when they work well. But, you know, when something goes wrong, it's not something you can always fix in the garage yourself. So, again, it's maybe we've talked about the pros, cons, old versus new, I'm sure, in the past many, many times.
Oh, yes, and yeah.
I do find that some of the older cars, I was a lot more confident about diving in under the hood than my newer vehicles. You know, the past two or three cars that I've had, really. I'm a little bit more leery about jumping in and doing everything myself. And, I mean, there's something to that, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, for instance, on the hybrid Escape that I'm driving now, you know, if something goes wrong with the electric motor, that is outside of my area of expertise.
And I don't think you absolutely should touch that. I mean, there's high voltages involved and you just don't want to do anything with that.
Oh, I don't know, man. What a way to go, right?
That's not very heroic, I don't think.
You lie at the funeral. And and listeners, everyone listening, also lie at the funeral. This will be our secret.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, there are a few things that you shouldn't tackle, but for the most part, I mean, I'm here to encourage you that most of the stuff is pretty easy.
Right.
It still is, outside of the electronic modules and replacing that and, you know, having to relearn certain things. And it seems like most things you can still do yourself. You can still do a fair amount of just hardware replacement, swap out type stuff. And still be in good shape. And if you happen to have an older car, you buy an older car for a project or something, that's a great place to start. I mean, it's a, it's a wonderful thing to learn. And you can apply that to other things, because now I have some confidence of, like, my phone needs a new battery. It's had a, has a real bad situation going on with that. But I'm sort of confident that I can follow the procedures that are online to replace that battery. It's just a hardware swap, really.
Yeah, and holy smokes, if I can do these kind of repairs, then listeners, you certainly can.
Yeah, that's true. But then, okay, to counterbalance this, I've tried to repair a broken DVD player before, and it resulted in an actual fire. A fire like the
Were you in a hurry?
You know what? No, I wasn't. I wasn't
were you
in a hurry.
I have to see the last 10 minutes of Wild Wild West.
No, the case is open. It was my mom's DVD player. I probably told you this. It wasn't working. And I thought, this is like when DVDs were pretty new, relatively new, you know, DVD players.
Yeah.
And I still had a VHS at my house, and, you know, I'd repaired that in the past. I mean, that's a more of a mechanical system than anything, really.
Right, yeah.
And I'd successfully fixed VCRs before. So I thought, well, this can't be that much different. I open up the case of the DVD player, and it's, of course, just nothing but electronic, you know, electric boards, motherboards and stuff.
Right.
And I still thought I could poke around and figure out what was wrong. So I fixed what I thought looked wrong with it, and I plugged it in to see if I could make it work. And as soon as I plugged it in, a small blue and yellow flame appeared in the middle of I don't know what
summoning
I have
demons?
No idea what happened, but it was like maybe a 2 or 3 inch flame that only lasted for about 2 seconds, and it was gone. And, you know, a little puff of smoke that's in the room, and just the worst feeling ever, that, you know, that's I've ruined my mom's DVD player thinking that I could, you know, fix it. Stuff like that happens occasionally, but I don't know. So I'm a little leery about the phone repair that's coming up, but again,
I replaced a phone screen.
Really?
Yeah, it's
nice work.
You just have to be patient. But the problem is, a lot of these phones are increasingly, like the cars, phones are actually in the forefront of this charge. They're built so that instead of repairing one, it's more convenient for someone to buy a new one.
They have things like proprietary screw heads.
Mm-hmm. Planned obsolescence.
You have to buy the screw head that fits that phone.
Yeah.
You can find
kits, but also you can find rating systems for how difficult or easy a home repair is on a phone.
Yeah.
I got some bad news, man. I don't want to, I don't want to compromise too much of our personal lives here by saying what kind of phones we have. But you and I have had very similar phone models, and, they are rated as terrible to, replace, at least for the screen.
Oh boy. But you did it successfully.
Yeah.
Good work.
Well, it wasn't quite the same after I got everything sandwiched back together.
Yeah.
But it worked. The engine started, you could say.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's good.
It looked janky, man, to be honest with you. Cause I had most everything back in the right place and screwed down, and every so often it would just be weird because I was working by hand. I'd never done this before.
Yeah.
I wasn't as precise as a professional would be at all, but it did give me a sense of validation. It's like, look, I fixed the thing.
Well, see, that's the way I feel about this week. I'm feeling that way about my spark plug fix.
Yeah.
And that's silly. I know, but I feel really good about it because something else happened. I was able to diagnose that and repair it successfully. And once you're done with that, I tell you, it's a great feeling. It's really a true confidence booster. And this is I'm just starting to kind of wade into this car as far as, like, you know, at home repairs with stuff that's, you know, coming up, you know, just regular maintenance stuff.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I mean, I'm not sure yet, but it's almost like it's starting to, it's almost like we got a better relationship, me and my car now. Before I was a little bit cold about it, and it's like I've got a little bit more of a feeling of like, yeah, this is my car, and I can handle generally what comes up on it. I can fix it. And I've had that really strong with my other vehicles, but this car to date, not quite as much. I wouldn't say that, it's an inseparable bond or anything that we've got yet, but, I guess I could see that, you know, after a few years of doing stuff like this, it might improve our relationship. You know, the way I feel about the car, you know, like if I'm confident that I can fix some things and, you know, feel good about being able to keep it on the road, you know, at home, you know, with stuff I do at home, that's going to help. That's going to help my my outlook, I guess, about keeping or getting rid of that car.
I think
that plays big into that. Let's see what else. So we talked about tools, but we didn't really say that you don't need to buy like some huge professional toolkit or anything.
No, keep it simple.
And a lot of cases, I mean, you don't need all these specialty tools and things. Just buy a good general toolkit. You can buy a kind of a catch-all kit that has, you know, screwdrivers and sockets and all that. And
think of it like a garage survival kit.
Yeah, and when you have to change that O2 sensor, find out specifically what you know what socket you need for it, and go out and buy just that one to add to your kit.
A simple collection of well organized tools is going to be infinitely more convenient and more valuable than like a hoarder collection of, we've all seen this, you know, just the box of just hammers and bolts.
Yeah.
And no, or here is a bucket of different sockets.
Yeah. Oh, that
I just dig through till I find, you know, 7/8.
Yeah, that happens, and I've seen people that operate like that, and that is no way to keep your tools organized, and it makes things a lot more difficult. They somehow manage, but I don't quite understand how that works out. I'm a little bit more organized than that in my personal life. I hope most people are really. I think when they start something like this, they keep the tools all, you know, where they should be, so they can. You know, easy access, and you can, you know, quickly grab whatever you need. No real hassle to that whole thing. And again, you don't have to go out and buy Snap-on tools as if you're going to just begin, you know, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I'm saying, you know, they're great tools. I'm just saying you don't need to do that when you're just starting out. If you're planning to, you know, tackle a brake job this weekend, you don't necessarily have to buy the best tools out there.
Now, of course, if you and I ever start an auto tool empire, then we'll have a kit for the kind of tools you need.
Of course.
It'll be crazy expensive.
Yeah, that's right. Really. Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to hear more from our listeners about your craziest repair.
Yeah, you know, I think we did a show on this. It was like Gonzo Repairs or something. You know, like some of the crazy things that you've done. I was thinking of one recently, Ben. I also brought up in this, but it doesn't really fit in this. But now that we're talking about it, maybe I can.
Yeah, yeah.
On the road one time, I had I think it was in my Festiva. The exhaust, one of the brackets in the back finally just gave way. You know, rusted out. It was the original muffler on the thing, and one of the brackets or the clip holding it. So I'm dragging the exhaust through town, right? And it just happened. You know, I don't know, half a block back, and I pull over. And it's pouring rain outside. And, of course, the muffler's all hot and everything. And it's summertime, pouring rain. And I'm in the middle of this little downtown area, Birmingham, Michigan, right in on the main stretch there in downtown. And I've got the situation. I don't know if I should rip the muffler off because it's still firmly connected at the front. I don't have the right tools to do that with me at the time. I don't know why I didn't. And I needed to find some way to just, you know, hold it back up. I needed some wire or something like that. Didn't have that. And so I had an old t-shirt on.
Yeah.
I tore one of the sleeves off my shirt, and I used that to kind of like lasso the connector, you know, around the exhaust and hold it up to that old connector that was still there and tie it on. And it looked like hell, but it got me home.
Yeah.
And things
cool
like that happen. I mean, you have to use what you've got and what's available. And I've done that so many times with, you know, my MG and, I guess on that CRX, I did that many, many times.
I always think of those as MacGyver moments.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd like to hear some people's examples of what they did. Yeah. Like, have you ever tried that thing where you put an egg in the radiator or the pepper?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we had a podcast on that one too, right?
Yeah.
Was it pepper in the radiator?
Yeah, I think it was pepper in the radiator. Yeah. And, you know, things like that are
which
are
is
fun
a last resort.
Those are fun to talk about, you know, those things. But I guess I think what I really would like to get from our listeners here is some of the guys that have you know, been wrenching on cars for decades, you know, long, long time.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get some advice from those guys, you know, to give to some of our other listeners who maybe are brand new to this or still lacking the confidence to get out there and do this for the first time. Like, what are some of the things you learned along the way that are just critical that would you know, help somebody out, you know, that would give them the confidence to go out and do something, you know, something simple like a spark plug repair or changing the oil or, you know, even a brake job. Oh, can I just say one more quick thing about this? If you're thinking about, and this is going back to advice, I guess, you said this with brakes. So you did brakes, you did both drum brakes and disc brakes, right?
Right.
The first time I did drum brakes, one of the best things that I heard and one of the best pieces of advice that I heard from anybody was that the first time you do this, and maybe even a couple of times after you do this, take both sides apart, but as far as like exposing both sides,
yeah,
but leave one side connected and the way it was from the factory as you do the other repair. Don't attempt to do,
right.
Don't try to do like, you know, remove the shoes
both
on both sides at
yeah.
one time. Leave one intact and then you can go around to kind of have a reference point to know what it should look like.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, simple things like that, but see, that's advice that you only understand or know after you've done it a few times.
Here's another one, especially in this age of cell phones. Use your cell phone to take a photograph of the thing as well.
That's a really good.
That's
one too.
Another, that, you know, for something where there's not a paired system like mm-hmm. there are with drum brakes.
Yeah, and I did. Well, you know what I did just recently too, this week? On the intake manifold of my car, there's a hose that, or actually rather just an opening for a hose, a tube that comes off of the intake manifold, and it looks like it's missing a hose. And I thought, well, that could be a vacuum issue if that, you know, found its way off of there, if it bounced
right.
off in some
yeah.
way. So I went online and I just looked up, a photograph of my engine bay, you know, from someone else, you know, that somebody's posted. And I was able to see that there's not supposed to be anything there. It's just like a breather almost or something like that. I can't remember what it was. But I was concerned that, you know, I was missing a hose and all I had to do was look at a photograph of another similar engine, the same engine, and realize that, no, it's not missing that part or that should be, you know, still open instead of connected. So things like that, it's really an invaluable tool, and it's a great time to have access to all stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Online service manuals, you don't even have to get the old Chilton's or Haynes manuals anymore if you don't want to.
I think you should still have them.
I like to have one. I like to have one in the car with
me. Yep, read my mind.
And also like to have it just, car. You know, the old dog-eared version on the workbench, you know, with oil all
with
over the
oil thumbprints on it.
Oil everywhere on that thing, but it's a great thing to have, and you can, of course, pass that along with the new owner, you know, when you sell the vehicle. But online versions of that are available, and you can print pages from those if you want to take it out into the garage for the procedure. Man, there's so much advice that we could give to a new wrencher that would be valuable, I think. But I would like to hear from our listeners and have them write in with some of the, some of the sage wisdom that they
right.
have.
Some of the hard-earned wisdom, some of the, and then the engine exploded, and now I know not to do X.
Yeah, here's why you do not do a timing belt job on your own at home.
I think everybody's got their own stories with this stuff, so we'd love to hear it. You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW. We always have some interesting things that may not make it to the air for one reason or another, and that's your way. That's the best place to find those. You can also check out the podcast that we talked about earlier on our website, carstuffshow.com, and write to us directly. We're not kidding. We want these stories of like the weirdest or most disastrous or coolest repairs you ever did, inside tips for your fellow listeners, new and old renters alike. You can send those to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.